I turn to look, I see they've snatched the sun from all around you. Why, you hardly seem to want what's yours. You hardly seem to care. If you love the sun, it's where you come from. Then you had better dare to seize the time. The time is now. Oh, seize the time. And you know how.
Whew. Boy, it's good to hear that song again. That's Elaine Brown, and it's from the album Seize the Time, and the name of the song is Seize the Time, and that album, actually, the entire thing was conducted and arranged by Horace Tapscott, really a joint work, a collaboration between Elaine Brown and Horace Tapscott that produced a very powerful piece of music, and I used to have it on an LP, and it was so scratchy I couldn't listen to it anymore, and I just happened to stumble into a CD version of it over the weekend, and I thought, gotta play this. And also because it does raise the question of seizing the time. Joining us now is Deborah Sweet, National Director of World Can't Wait. Deborah, how are you?
Good, let's try this again.
I was telling Marjorie, I thought maybe you had fallen into a tin can. That's what seemed to happen. Either that or you got evaporated. You know, you never know what these bush people are capable of, right?
That's why I keep keeping my mouth open.
What
make
you need?
Make a lot of noise, and then people
right.
will notice.
And don't forget to wear that tinfoil hat in case they're shooting rays, okay?
I actually wear orange all the time.
There
so
you go.
I'm very visible.
There you go. Okay. Now, let's jump into this. A couple weeks ago, you gave what I found to be a very moving, and you can tie this in with what you were saying to Marjorie when we lost you about the stand that the Lawyers Guild took was very, very inspiring to a lot of people. Maybe, and it really broke open some things, but you gave a speech at a national conference of World Can't Wait that I found very inspiring, very moving, and very thoughtful in terms of the questions that were posed by that. And, you know, one of the big questions I think that comes up is, you know, look, people will tell you there's 8 months max of Bush, you know, 7 months, 6 months, 8 months, whatever. You know, there's just a measurable period of time that's getting smaller and smaller every day. This is going to be over soon. So, you know, people start to look for different things. They start to settle in. And your speech was actually speaking directly to people cannot do this. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, well, we were up in Berkeley about a week ago with activists from World Can't Wait and other organizations around the country. And we were looking at what the situation actually is rather than just basing our actions on what we hope things will be. And we had to look very seriously at the U.S. threats towards Iran right now. It's gone from a situation where 6 months, a year ago, the U.S. Critique on Iran was that Bush was complaining that Iran may get knowledge of how to make nuclear weapons, and that was totally unacceptable. And now there's a whole new round of lies against Iran, that Iran is trying to destabilize Iraq. And it just, you know, first of all, it's a pattern that we saw repeated in 2002, 2003. Why would we think this would be anything different than the U.S. preparing to attack a sovereign nation? And, you know, Marjorie was very correct in talking about war crimes that have already been committed in terms of torture. That's a big part of the indictment of the Bush regime. But it is a war crime on the face of it to belligerently threaten a sovereign country, which is what the United States is doing now towards Iran, from Iraq and from its perch of, you know, I think looking at the whole Middle East as something that U.S. interests are really demanding Bush make a move to tie up and control right now. None of us knows, and I'm sure all the people involved don't know either, whether Bush is planning to definitely attack Iran from the air. There's certainly a lot of evidence that the war has already started in terms of border incursions. I read this weekend that the United States is building a 6,000 person barracks about 30 or so kilometers inside Iraq from Iran. They're building bases. They've got Iran encircled with U.S. military, and now they're sending more nukes into the Persian Gulf. If they're not planning to attack immediately, they're certainly threatening hard. And this is really a question for people all over the world to be extremely concerned about.
You know, it's incredible. It's incredibly important to say this point about exactly this thing is this is not a regime without teeth. You know, this system is not a system that's sort of going into its sort of hibernation mode while they wait for the next permutation of U.S. imperialist rule to happen. Mm-hmm. They are posing real dangers to Iran and to humanity as we mm-hmm. speak.
Mm-hmm. I was on Iranian TV yesterday and I was really trying to aim my message at the people watching from Iran. And, you know, I said, I think one of the similarities is probably, certainly in the United States, 80% of the country really despises its president. I'm sure it's at least that many in Iran that despises its president. And in neither country have people so far found the ways to raise their voices loud enough and take enough decisive action to remove these regimes. The U.S., though, actually has a plan for regime change in Iran, and I seriously doubt whether the Iranian regime has a plan for regime change in the United States.
Mm-hmm. You know, let's talk about this in terms of what a lot of other people, including many people who should be out in the streets, just outraged around this. One thing that's really been holding people back, it seems, has been the idea that, well, look, in 6 months you're going to have an election and you'll have the Democrats come in and mm-hmm. Things will then change. What would you say to people about that? I mean, that's got to be a big question for World Can't Wait, I know.
It is. It's, you know, we've been grappling with this situation for a while now and, you know, we all met from around the country and yep, in fact, a guy up in the Bay Area said, well, okay, I live here in the home of Democrat Central, and the big problem with the situation right now is that people are accepting things that they would have not accepted 5 years ago. If you would have told people the amount of devastation that was going to be rained on Iraq, that more than 1 million people would be dead, you know, people would have said, hell no, in greater numbers than we even did at that time and would have not have rested. But now there's a calculation going on. Well, how many deaths are acceptable if the U.S. attacks Iran? Is it 25,000 or 50,000? All seen now through the calculation of the three major candidates legitimizing the war on terror. Both of the Democrats, for instance, plan to increase the U.S. military by 90 to 100,000. And where are those military forces going to come from? They're going to come from the 15, 16, 17, 18-year-olds right now. This is one of the reasons World Can't Wait is taking up this kind of controversial stand of closing down military recruiters, starting with the Marine recruiting station in Berkeley, but having protests all over the country at military recruiters. And one reason we know we've been effective is that every time we show up, the recruiters are either closed down or they're defended by dozens and dozens of police.
You know, it's really amazing. You know, when we're talking here, and I'm thinking about this, the point that we keep making about, okay, there's you know, all this stuff running around, and you think about Hillary Clinton saying that, you know, that she will, if she was elected, she will obliterate Iran if there's, you know, if they step out of line, basically, if they have nuclear weapons, if they have a nuclear weapon or whatever. You know, not only is there nothing indicating that Iran is anywhere close to having a nuclear weapon, but that for them to say, for her to say, I will obliterate Iran, and for that not to become a huge source of contention indicates something about what's going on in the ruling class in this country.
Well, that's true, but it also indicates something among the people.
Exactly.
Because there's, as you pointed out, and we said in our call almost 3 years ago, what you do not choose to resist and mobilize to stop, you will learn or be forced to accept. And there's been a hell of a lot of accommodation going on to the degree that I think, you know, people start out thinking the Democrats are the anti-war party. It's almost an assumption in this country that that's the case. And then slowly, as the candidates get more and more competitive and more have a chance to win, that message gets superseded, and you people find themselves accommodating and lowering their sights to such a level that they would not have recognized their political positions a couple of years ago if they realized where they are now. And it's had the effect of dampening this great outrage. Look, it's very unusual in a country like this to have 80% of the population thinking the country is going in a very bad direction and openly despising the role their president has played, and for that president to still be in office. And I think it has a lot to do with the Democratic opposition.
You know, it's interesting because you talked about in your speech about this reservoir of opposition in society in general, and that had a lot to do with, you know, with the fact that even they began and they have dragged these damn interminable, you know, primary elections for the Democrats and whatnot on for so long. I think they're going to go on way past November. They've hit on a good thing and they're going to keep going at it. But what were you talking about there?
Well, you know, we've been really grappling since the 2004 election with this reservoir of opposition to the whole direction the Bush regime has gone. And, you know, so far, and this is part of what World Can't Wait's been looking at, along with other organizations, we have not been able to get that reservoir to move so decisively that it could force the kind of political situation where Bush and Cheney in particular had to leave office. But the indication that reservoir is still there exists, for instance, in the Obama campaign itself. People are quite amazed that this candidacy has gone so far. Well, it is actually on the backs of people who are so hopeful that something could change and so opposed to what's been going on. The reservoir, you know, also exists, for instance, in what the dock workers did on May 1st. This is another thing we were talking about when we were out there. There was a protest that day led by the ILWU that, you know, didn't have that many dock workers in it. And if you just looked at that, you saw a tiny slice of the picture. 25,000 dock workers darkened 29 ports in one day. And this is a union that is firmly in the Democratic Party camp, but what they talked about that day had nothing to do with the election. It was about stopping the war. And I don't think anyone really expected that all those 29 ports were going to be shut down so decisively over a political demand of stopping the war. And, you know, I just think we should take a lot of heart from that and keep on finding the ways to give this reservoir of opposition the ways to express itself.
You know, I also found that one thing that you started to talk to, too, is that some of this, and I was talking with this with Marjorie about this, too, is that there, lately there's been also some opposition being expressed within the ranks of the mainstream media, within the ranks of the ruling class to a certain extent, you know, even in the U.S. military. You mentioned this Colonel Morris Davis in your speech, which I thought was very interesting. Can you tell people about that?
Yeah, this is a guy in the Air Force who presided over the whole system of military tribunals. And by his own admission, he was very much in favor of this system from the beginning in 2002. Then he began to be more skeptical. And he was interviewed, I think, by Philippe Sands in the Vanity Fair piece called The Green Light about what made him resign. And he resigned from the military over this because he was told by one of his superiors, look, there are not going to be any acquittals of these six detainees who are going on trial before the military tribunals. And he not only resigned, but he's agreed to testify for the defense. Another fascinating thing happened today. The prosecution of one of these six detainees was dropped today. They're not saying that they might not come back and prosecute him again, but my reading of this is essentially because we know all of these prosecutions involve the use of torture against the detainees, that the government does not want to release that information, and there are federal judges, you know, that are ruling that they have to give up some of this information about the hour-to-hour records of how these detainees were treated. things are breaking apart, and I take a lot of hope from what's happened with this demand that John Yoo be fired. There's a tremendous basis for it. This is not just a pie-in-the-sky idea that'll never happen. They would not have written the Military Commissions Act as they did, building an immunity for not only the people who carried out torture in the U.S. military, the CIA, and the private contractors. They built an immunity for the lawmakers and the people who gave the orders. And if they weren't worried morally, ethically, politically, and even militarily about the implications of their actions, why would they have tried to write immunity into these laws?
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, it, you know, it needs to come apart, and it's really going to come apart essentially from the actions of the people. This is why World Can't Wait is joining with the National Lawyers Guild and Act Against Torture and other groups to go to these law school graduations around the country in the next couple of weeks. And we're handing out orange postcards that are directed to the dean of the law school where you teaches at UC Berkeley, you know, demanding that he be fired. And we're going to see that demand through, as Marjorie talked about it, he should be fired, disbarred from the practice of law, and he should be prosecuted and tried for war crimes.
Now, tell me something about this, because there's a point here, and I want to try and, in the time we have a minute, actually before I do that, let me remind people that I'm speaking with Deborah Sweet, the National Director of World Can't Wait, and this is KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. I'm Michael Slate. And I want to ask you this, Deborah. You know, there's a point that you've made a number of times about, well, it's, you know, we look at Iran, which is a very powerful argument you were making in the beginning of this, and these other things that have been going on, and then the cracks that are happening in the, you know, in the other side of the society. But there's a whole point that we're up against something. The people of the world and the people here are up against something. And it's not just even the Bush regime and the amount of time that it has in office, but there's actually a whole thing that it set in motion that World Can't Wait was among the very few to speak to when it began. That there's a whole refashioning of the social fabric in society. It's in a very fascistic direction. Can you speak to that a little? Because that seems to be something that people can't close their eyes to.
Yeah, we referred to it as the Bush regime is setting out to remake the society in a fascist direction and for generations to come. You know, in other words, it's not whatever the terms of this election are, if there is an election and there's a different president, there's a lot that's been already put in place, and it doesn't just end and change over because George Bush is no longer the president. There's been so much penetration, just an example, into the U.S. military by the Christian fundamentalists. And, you know, I've been meeting and corresponding with a number of people who are active against this Christian fascist or Christian fundamentalist organizational penetration into the military. You know, these are people for the separation of church and state, you know, whether they're religious or not, and they're very alarmed. And this was described to me thusly by an Air Force officer who's part of this military freedom of religion organization, Mikey Weinstein. He said, you know, you can't get the authority to carry out war crimes without really substantial indoctrination within the military, that you are acting on the basis of God's will.
Hmm.
This is a criticism made all the time against the Islamic fundamentalists, mm-hmm. a very valid one. But here you have, in supposedly, you know, the freest country in the world, the United States, a situation where there's active recruiting for very conservative Christian fundamentalist groups at the Pentagon, at the Air Force Academy, in all of these institutions, in the officer corps. And this is having a very substantial effect on the society. It's not something you wipe out with a decree. It's training people to think in a different way and to, you know, do all this for the the better good of a Christian empire. There was a situation where somebody in the U.S. military came back from Iraq on the basis of he wanted to have an atheist meeting in the military. And, you know, his commanding officer said, "You can't do that. That's against the Constitution. This is a Christian country."
Huh. Wow. Wow.
So the guy gets sent back to Kansas. This kind of stuff's happening all over the place. And you know, don't even get me started on what's happened to the right of abortion and birth control and what's actually the situation for gay rights in this country.
Right. Well, let me ask you this, because we have about 5 minutes left, and I want to make sure that we get into this, because, you know, you've talked about this, and including this whole remaking, you know, of the society in a fascistic direction. This, you know, there's a question here of which you've argued very forcefully in your speech, and actually your speech is available on your website, which is
worldcantwait.org.
Right. And I think people should really get it and look at it. It's really well worth studying and thinking about in relation to where things are at now and where they need to be. Now, you say that, you know, you point to all this, all the things that are going on, including this whole agenda that this regime has set into place, this program that needs to be totally repudiated. And you say that 3 years ago we set out to meet a great need. We haven't been able to achieve that, the level of mass resistance and public repudiation needed to drive out the Bush regime yet. But because we haven't done that doesn't mean that it can't happen. And I'd like you to speak to that both overall, but also moving into the kinds of plans that you guys did come up with. You do have some strategic planning that you engaged with in this national conference, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, just on a philosophical level, just to say something hasn't happened yet, it's a wrong method to say that then, therefore, it precludes it from happening. And, you know, I should say that we're looking to take advantage of every angle to open up a lot more space in this society for dissent at all levels, not just on the streets, but in the schools and the institutions. And it would be an excellent thing if organizations like the American Psychological Association and, you know, the faculty at Bolt Hall Law School really split over these questions of what are we going to allow in our institutions. But, you know, the name of our organization is The World Can't Wait, Drive Out the Bush Regime, and, you know, we are grappling with that. We made a plan last week at our national meeting to focus on four areas that we felt could allow us to do the very most that we can and to draw many other people in to repudiating the Bush program. And we are still allowing for the possibility of Bush and Cheney having to leave office, and we'll do whatever we can to foster that. But those four areas are, first of all, acting to prevent an attack on Iran. People can go to our website and sign the pledge against an attack on Iran and get an Iran fact sheet to distribute, get a lot of information about what plans are in various cities. Number two, we're going to protest at the Democratic National Convention in Denver at the end of August with other organizations, but our message is going to be not so much to the people inside the convention, but certainly the people of the world and the people in this reservoir, that the Democratic nominee of 2008 is not going to speak for us. Even if we want him or her to be speaking for us, objectively, that's not the situation. They are not going to end the war. They have no intentions of stopping the fascist remaking and the torture state. Not that their program won't
be. You have a minute and a half, Deborah.
Bush's. Yeah. Third thing is that we're in this battle to get John Yoo fired, disbarred, and tried for war crimes. I think the website is firejohnyoo.org. You can get copies of this postcard and be involved in that effort. And military recruiters, what are they recruiting for? Murder, rape, torture, war? We're going out, especially among high school students and youth, to struggle hard with people. Don't build up this military empire. Don't go there. It's a very bad thing. It's done a lot of harm in the anti-war movement for people to have said